Between aging infrastructure, constant gridlock, and the record 15,000 people living without housing, Toronto has had its hands full this year. There's been some wins. The City of Toronto is meeting its own housing targets, having approved more than 2,900 rent-controlled homes this year under the Rental Housing Supply Program. Construction started on more than 3,000 rent-controlled homes, with 700 new affordable and rent-geared-to-income homes completed now. But Osage Park is the largest park to open in decades, and the Finch West LRT finally opened in December. That's Toronto Northwest's new rapid transit line that came after years of repeated delays. But there's also been losses. Differences of opinions with the province continue to add new tensions. Queen's Park has been a constant site for protest. Most recently, Toronto councillors called on the Ford government to reform a new housing bill that's now law that would put critical city services that support unhoused people in jeopardy if passed. Ontario's fall sitting made progress on a number of initiatives. The Office of the Premier said in a press release mid-December, aiming to protect workers, businesses, and communities. Ontario Premier Doug Ford made a promise to voters that if re-elected, he would protect the economy from tariffs. Now, as the dust settles and the Ontario legislature prepares to hibernate for 14 long weeks, the year comes to a close, and there's still more changes to come in 2026. But are we better off? Is Toronto better off than it was last year?
No, we're not better off this year than we were last year. And there are a few reasons for that. Our infrastructure is not prepared. Our emergency systems are not prepared. We are not ready for extreme wildfires, which have already hit LA and nearly hit New York.
To answer that question is MPP University Rosedale-elect Jessica Bell. She is a member of the NDP and the official opposition's finance critic. In her third term now, she's been working in politics for 7 years. This is a year in review. We talk about the ups and downs of 2025, and we also look ahead to the future to discuss what's in store for Toronto in the new year. Here's our conversation. Jessica Bell represents constituents for the University Rosedale riding in Toronto. She's with us now in studio. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. We got a lot to unpack as we talk about year end, but before we get into some of the bigger files, to get some background on you, how long have you been in politics for?
I got elected in 2018. I'm in my third term.
What's been your experience before getting into Queen's Park?
I worked as an executive director and an organizer for political nonprofits, mainly working on issues to make our cities more sustainable. I co-founded TTC Riders, which is a transit advocacy organization campaigning for better service and lower fares, still an issue. And prior to that, I worked in California building big coalitions to make our the food sector there more sustainable and address hunger issues.
So we're talking about 2025, we're about to be in a new year. When you look back at the start of this year, is there a particular event or day in-house that you look back on that you would see as the start of 2025?
Oh, that's a really good question. There's a few things that come to mind. For me, 2025 really kickstarted with a bang because we had a provincial election. It was a surprise election. It was early and the election was held in the middle of winter. And it was only about 30 days long, which is very short. That was really the defining moment for me. That was the start of 2025, spending upwards of 12 hours a day outdoors talking to constituents who understandably had a lot of concerns with the state of the world and the state of the province. And the big ones that I heard during the election were real worries about the state of our healthcare system. If you go down to the emergency room, Toronto Western, St. Mike's, you're in for a really, really long wait. So people have a lot of concerns about that. And then the big one that I think has really defined 2025, which the government has clearly not worked on, is the issue around housing affordability. Renters are really, really struggling to make ends meet and pay the rent at the end of the month. It's extremely difficult for them. So that's what kickstarted 2025 for me, hearing those concerns.
Yeah. Part of the campaign that the Ford government ran on is they made a promise to deliver a robust economic plan to protect workers and businesses against impending tariff doom from our neighbors down south. You're the party's financial critic. What progress have you seen the government made on committing to these promises?
Yeah, so that's an excellent question. Doug Ford is trying really, really, really hard to throw his hands up in the air and say, "Shucks, guys, I'm doing my best here to protect our economy from Donald Trump, and it's really hard. And the reason why we have so many issues in our province is because of something I really don't have much control over." So that's his general line, and I quite frankly think that's not true. We have an economy right now which is really struggling. We have over 700,000 people who are looking for work, and that's particularly acute when you look at at youth who have much higher rates of unemployment than other sectors. I have never before had conversation after conversation with young people who've graduated from high school or have an MBA or even a PhD who are telling me I cannot find a job in the field that I want to work in. And the other issue is that we are seeing the government as their strategy to, fix our economic woes, hand out money, hand over fist to big companies with no strings attached. We are seeing this with the Skills Development Fund, where they literally gave money to their donors to provide training to unemployed people. And we are seeing that with their Protect Ontario Fund, where they're giving money to companies where those companies have no commitment to keep jobs, no commitment to not give that money to executives for bonuses, and no commitment to just take that money and then go down south and set up their manufacturing facility down south. So what I'm really trying to say is, the Premier is the most important and influential and powerful person in our province, and he has a huge amount of power to address some of the economic challenges that we are facing, and his strategy is not working. That's the thrust of it.
You know, a lot of the rhetoric from the Ford government is that they want to get shovels in the ground, they want to move through debates faster, we want to reduce delays.
We're being held back by our own processes. We're being held back by red tape and endless delays. Businesses that want to come here and invest in Ontario, they're forced, I'm sorry, to navigate a maze of red tape and bureaucracy.
You know, we're in a time of numerous crises, as you just so articulately pointed out. We're in a housing crisis, an affordability crisis, a homelessness crisis. The government, you know, has said that we need to just get moving and get going. Is there a sense of urgency to get these things moving along?
Yeah, so I mean, there's a few things I want to say about this thing. The government has said continuously that we want to invest in infrastructure like the Ring of Fire, a new mining project up north, and we want to invest in public transit, and we want to invest in hospital infrastructure and new schools. That is a good thing. We should be investing in public services like hospitals, public transit, and schools. The challenge is that the government is talking up its announcements. However, they're not spending as much as they should be spending on infrastructure to meet the very real needs we have on public transit, healthcare, and housing, and education. They're not spending enough. And the other issue that they're doing is that they continue, despite their rhetoric, they continue to make deals with foreign companies, including US companies, to build the public transit or the hospitals that we so desperately need. And when they do that, it means that we have less jobs available for workers in Ontario and Canada. We have less control over the project. And it means that any profit is taken out and goes down south instead of being reinvested into our economy here. What we would also like to see this government do is have greater public ownership over these infrastructure projects so that we have far greater say and control over who gets hired and what kind of projects get built. So in the case of the public transit lines that are being built in the GTHA right now, most of these lines are going to be automated. There's not going to be drivers. The subway cars are going to be a lot smaller than you would traditionally expect. And it is US companies that are building them. We have very little influence once the contract is signed with what is actually going to be done and how, with what is actually going to be done. So I think we can do a lot better than that when we're looking at spending our infrastructure money to make sure that we're employing people here. The other issue you bring up, you can always interrupt me, but the other issue that this government likes to talk about is how, you know, we need to, you know, speed up decision-making, get shovels in the ground. But when they're saying those words, what they really mean is that they want to get rid of environmental protections. They want to get rid of worker protections, and they want to thumb their nose at democratic processes like consultation, respecting First Nations rights, respecting, municipal jurisdiction, things like that. And, we're all worse off if we, don't respect the cleanliness of our water or, put workers in a situation where they could be injured or killed on the job. We do not need to build infrastructure and get rid of those fundamental laws that we spent, such a long time working for. And that is something that I am extremely concerned about.
Yeah, I wanted to dive into that. You've criticized the Ford government for limiting debate and skipping public hearings. Why is the public participation process so important to prioritize?
So in this legislative, the government is doing a whole lot of things to thumb their nose at democracy. What we're seeing at Queen's Park is they are introducing a bill and they're ramming it through as quickly as possible. And that's now standard practice. They're not even taking it to committee. And a committee, it means the public, stakeholders, experts, municipalities can talk about what they like about the bill and what some unintended consequences are with the bill and how they think it should be improved. And we also get to introduce amendments, and so does the government, to make the bill as good as possible. And that makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense. When the government passes bills through, at rapid speed, without adequate consultation, we essentially come up with crappier bills that have more negative consequences than they need to. And it often results in the government having to turn around 6 months later or a year later and redo or amend the bill that they passed very quickly previously. And they've done this time and time and time again, actually. That's just not the way government should work. Queen's Park's job is 124 of us. Our job is to represent 14 million people. And that means we should be taking our time and having, substantive, thoughtful public consultation and conversations about legislation that's going to be affecting 14 million people instead of ramming it through in 10 days or less.
Mm-hmm. Is this something you've seen governments in the past do before? This like concept of the omnibus bill? Yeah, this is a new thing, right?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. So the Harper government is known as the first government that would bring in what's called an omnibus bill, where you bring in a whole lot of legislation and you pack it all into one bill and you ram it through. And it could include things from, housing to water quality. They don't have to all be related. And he introduced the omnibus bill, which is fairly undemocratic, and rammed them through. But I have never before seen a government introduce bill after bill after bill, including omnibus bills and budget bills, and just as standard practice, not bring any of them to committee for public consultation. I've never seen that before. And we also need to put this in broader context, which is that this is just the latest measure the government has done to undermine democracy in Ontario. They have, in addition to this, gotten rid of school board trustees, democratically elected school board trustees. They've brought in strong mayor powers to over 100 municipalities so that one mayor can override the rest of the city councillors when they're debating bills. They have got rid of ranked, different models of electing people, ranked choice voting that the City of Toronto and London and Kingston wanted to bring in. They I'm far more involved in handpicking judges for the judicial system. So really meshing, bringing together the legislature and the legal system, which should not be happening. So this is, this is just one of many things this government is doing to make them less accountable, make them more secretive, and make it much more difficult for people to have a say over the future of our province. It's very concerning.
There were a handful of bills that you helped put together, including the Protecting Ontario from Urban Wildfires Act, the Rent Stabilization Act, protecting seniors in care homes. What were some of the challenges you faced while pushing these through or attempting to get them to legislation?
Right. Yeah, so that's the thing. I regularly introduce a lot of bills in each legislative session. I spend a lot of my time focusing on housing affordability because it continues to be the number one issue I hear at the door. And I have found that I have something positive to say and something negative to say. The negative thing is that the Conservative government has continually picked a side of big corporate landlords over tenants. They have made it easier for big landlords to evict tenants. They have weakened rent controls. They have made it very hard for the tenants to use a landlord and tenant board to just get basic things done, like basic maintenance. So they've certainly picked a side, and life is a lot harder for renters in Ontario than it was 8 years ago. We are continuing to push, and I introduced this bill this time, for much stronger rent control so that tenants are protected from illegal eviction and they know how much they're going to be paying in rent each month, and it's more affordable. And even though the Conservatives have clearly demonstrated they are not interested in this bill or and these measures, we have found that municipalities are much more interested, and the public is much more interested. And that there's been this groundswell of tenant organizing that's occurring all across Ontario, that is building up our power to the point where, in my view, I think stronger rent controls are going to be inevitable. It's probably not going to happen under this government, but it is inevitable in my view. And we have seen that over the last 8 years. So one thing that's negative, one thing that's, I think, positive in the long term.
That sort of leads into my last question as we start to wrap things up here. But what do you think the biggest challenge Toronto will face in the new year?
Oh God. Toronto faces a lot of challenges. We are, a rapidly growing city, and it's like we live with continual growing pains. Housing affordability is a huge issue. We are one of the most expensive places to live in North America. And when people are spending so much money on rent or mortgages, it means that they spend a whole lot less money on supporting small businesses and different industries. It really does have a dragging effect on the economy. So making housing more affordable, building more affordable housing, in my view, remains one of the biggest issues the city faces. The other issue that I think is huge, and it's unfortunately because of the economic crises we are facing, is not getting a lot of attention, is we are not prepared for our future climate crisis. We're just not prepared. Not only are we not reducing greenhouse gas emissions from our, building sector and our transportation sector, which we can do as a city, we are not prepared for extreme weather. Our infrastructure is not prepared. Our emergency systems are not prepared. We are not ready for extreme wildfires, which have already hit LA and nearly hit New York. We are not prepared for massive flooding. Our infrastructure, our flooding, our sewage system is not prepared for that. Our basements are not prepared for that. We're not prepared for extreme heat. And the reality is that climate change is here, and in order for us to survive and thrive, we need to have all levels of government seriously invest in improving our infrastructure, our healthcare system, our education system, our workplace rules to get us ready for our new climate reality. That is essential that we move forward on that as a city.
We got a lot of can of worms happening here. We have the climate crisis,
No.
education crisis, affordability crisis. The big question we really want to ask you is, are we better off this year than we were last year?
No, we're not better off this year than we were last year. And there are a few reasons for that. Number one, we have Donald Trump down south, who is wreaking havoc on our global trade system. We have been hit with the highest tariffs that Canada has ever been hit with in recorded history. And it is having a very serious impact on employment, our manufacturing sector, and that will have ripple effects on even Toronto, a city which is very resilient and diverse. And then the other piece that I think is really critical is that the Conservative government, year in and year out, is not properly funding the services and the infrastructure that we all rely on, from healthcare to education to affordable housing. And it means that our quality of life is harmed as a result. Unfortunately, I do think that we are worse off than we were a year ago, and these are the reasons why.
If we start at the bottom, only place to go is up, right?
Right, exactly. And the good thing is, what I love about the city of Toronto and our province is that, people like to take matters into their own hands. It's the best city that I've ever lived in. There's so much to do here. People really care. And we've got a lot to do.
On that last note, my last question for you today, Jessica, are there any new bills you're thinking of bringing in? Can you tease anything for us coming in to the new year?
Some legislation that we are looking at introducing and campaigning on is this comes from renters actually, is to bring in a ban for above guideline rent increases. So this is a sneaky little thing that big landlords can do where they'll do renovations on a building and then they'll get tenants to pay for it by increasing their rent above the maximum allowable rent they're allowed to increase. So what that means is that tenants might be facing upwards of 5 to 6% rent increases each year to essentially pay rent twice because they're paying for maintenance that the landlords should already be paying for with their rent. So we think that should be banned. And then the other thing that we are looking at introducing is a strategy to really encourage and support the construction of affordable housing and non-market housing using Ontario wood. So our forestry industry is in crisis right now. A lot of the wood that we produce is specifically used for building construction and home construction. So let's use that wood to, build homes in towns and cities so we can solve two issues at once. It makes a lot of sense. So that's something that we'll be introducing as well.
Thank you so much, Jessica, for your time. I'll see you in 2026.
Yeah. Have a good holidays and a good new year, and thanks for having me on your show.
Jessica Bell is the MPP of University Rosedale. Bell is a member of the NDP and the official opposition party's finance critic. Okay, that's all for this week. This episode was fact-checked by Kinza Zafar. None of this coverage would be possible without the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. I'm Mia Johnson, and you're tuned into Met Radio, 1280 AM, CJTM.